Well, not quite. I'll be talking about more than just the Benjamins. Welcome to FinTech Beat, where finance, technology, and policy come together. I'm your host, Chris Brummer, and the future of finance is now. Times are booming, and with them, IPOs. And perhaps naturally, more people than ever are considering jumping ship from their current place of work to join a startup, all in the hopes of changing the world and just maybe making some money along the way. Now, in practice, the tool for making money often comes in the form of stock options granted to employees in exchange for a lower salary and loyalty to the company as options accrue over a period of time. But stock options are tricky, and recent studies indicate employees have left billions of dollars on the table by not exercising them. And their inability to do so is having an invisible impact on how wealth is being generated in Silicon Valley and who's getting it. Now, to talk a bit more about this challenge, I am delighted to have Frederick Meinhard, the CEO of SecFi, onto the show to talk about the drivers of the problem and what role fintech is playing to address them. Now, many of our listeners may not have heard of SecFi, but if you have, it's probably a good sign. Though a young company itself, SecFi is making waves working with employees from some of the country's best-known unicorns, aiming to help them understand and maximize the value of their stock options. And in doing so, they're creating a whole new understanding of the sharing economy. Hey, young world, the world is yours. Hey, young world, the world is yours. Young world, the world is yours. Young world. Frederick, thanks so much for joining the show.
Thanks so much, Chris, for having me here.
All right. I think, you know, let's just start off. You know, we have lots of listeners. Some of them work for governments and central banks, and then obviously those who work for startups. So let's just do a little bit of sort of startup economics 101. Why are options so important for those who work for startups?
Well, I think you put it out. You put it down pretty neatly in the beginning. Like, the reality is that working at a startup is a bit more challenging and a bit more, I would say, risky than working at your average company. The reality is that the majority of startups don't make it till the famed exit or acquisition by Facebook or one of the other like big tech companies. The majority just doesn't make it. And what happens, and sort of how startups try to like compensate employees and get them involved to try to, let's make sure that we actually get there, is to give them a piece of the company. So it's not just about getting paid. Usually actually get paid a little bit less, unfortunately, as well. But it's about this opportunity to also get a portion of the company next to your normal salary.
You know, it's really a pretty ingenious nook here you're hoping to carve out. How did you ever come across the idea of meandering into this startup employee education options market? I mean, where did the inspiration come from?
Yeah, in the end, usually these companies get started where you go to one of these very painful experiences yourself. And that's what happened to us. And I think happened to me, happened to like the majority of employees that work for SecFi, actually. In some way or form, it is their second or third or first startup company. We're a startup. We give stock options. And everybody, in a way, had to deal with this and solved it in their own particular way and found us and was like, damn, that's a thing that we need to solve and fix.
You know, okay, so when you think about your normal employee, the first question is, do employees tend to understand stock options, even though they are such a larger proportion of their salary, or at least of the value of being an employee? And then relatedly, you know, is that showing up in your data in terms of how many end up actually exercising their options?
I think the way you pose the question is very informative already. Like, unfortunately, most people don't. I think the reality is that everybody's heard of like engineer number 16 joined WhatsApp, and then two months later gets acquired by Facebook, instant millionaire, right? That's the beauty story. And unfortunately, the majority of individuals sort of join this company. They're like, oh, great, I also get the stock option package. let's build a company and then that might get me somewhere at some point in time. But yeah, this beautiful story that you heard before is not the average. By far, it's not the average. And the reality is that over time, people don't really think about the stock option package. They got it when they got a job offer. They skimmed through it very quickly. And then after that, yeah, you put it aside. And you start to build. And you start to work. And everybody, you have this family and new people start to join. It goes like crazy. And then, yeah, you forgot to actually think about your stock options and do something clever with it. That's the majority. I think 80% of individuals never end up exercising their stock options. I think that's the number that came out of a research that Schwab did a couple of years ago.
That is a pretty disruptive narrative, isn't it? I mean, the traditional story is that options are necessary to help incent people to come to work for a startup. And though that may be the case, at least initially, it seems like something is happening where it just doesn't end up that way. I mean, people are getting caught up in the experience, as you're saying, of creating something, probably hoping they're perhaps part of something bigger than even themselves. But ultimately, they never end up unlocking that value embedded in their options. I mean, 80% is a pretty big number. What's going on behind that number? And why do you think that's the case?
Yeah. I think for some of them, it was probably the right call. Like this is also the reality, right? That's the beauty of how stock options work. It is literally, no pun intended, it is an option to buy a share in a company. And you get that option at a very low strike price or cost to actually pay for that share. And if that has increased over time, well, you have a great deal, right? You can buy something for a dollar and it ends up being $50. Like who doesn't want that? But obviously some don't actually get there and then people end up not exercising, which was the right thing to do because that's also the beauty of a stock option and the flexibility that someone has. Like you don't have to put up cash unless you really want to. Unfortunately, a big part of that 80% also doesn't exercise because the costs at some point are too high because you have to pay taxes when you exercise your stock options and you just simply can't afford for the taxes. And that is the reason they can't exercise. Or they just find it super hard to figure out, hey, is this really worth it over time? Because yeah, if it's 3 months before the Uber IPO, you're probably pretty sure that Uber is going to make it, right? That is not so hard anymore. But that's like for the majority of that timeline and that time frame of the company being private, yeah, that exit path is not so clear. And there's a lot of tough decisions you need to make and a lot of thinking you have to do to figure that out.
So that's really helpful. Basically, this idea that people are not exercising their options in part because it may not be the smart thing to do economically, and that employees themselves may be unsure as to the ultimate value or even success of the firms they're working for, or even the underlying economics that would be in play if they were to ultimately exercise their options in light of the success of their firms. And to that end, they may not even have the money to exercise their options. And this could be, at least in part, due to the taxes they would have to pay, again, on exercising those options. So given this sort of range or complex of problems, where does SecFi fit in the space? And what problem or problems are you trying to solve?
Yeah. So what we try to do is make sure that everybody understands what they're dealing with. Like that's step number one. So SecFi is all about first giving you the tools to make the right decision and the right call. So I'd rather, like the worst of all is someone not exercising if they should have exercised, but they didn't do it because they didn't understand. If you end up not exercising because you think about it, you contextualize it, you get all the data points you need, and then you decide, hey, this is not the right call, that's a good decision, right? Then good for you. So we want to put someone in a position to understand, hey, should I do this? Give someone the ability to understand. We have an entire tech platform and planning suite online that people can use for that. And then the second step is that for some folks, not for everybody, but for some folks, it is simply too expensive. And what we then do is we help them with the financing to do so. So we help them come up with the cash and the capital so they can exercise them.
That's really interesting. Okay, so let's go into the cost part. How much of the problem is A, the strike price and they don't really have the money, B, that they have the money but they can't afford taxes, or the taxes make exercising their options less than economically rational, or C, that they exercise their options, but they don't know or fully realize what tax hit they take. And as a result, after exercising their options, they need some kind of emergency financing.
Yeah, well, that's the worst case scenario, that you exercise and then you figure out later that you have to pay tax. And that does happen. And those are really, painful discussions you have with people. And then you try to figure that out. Luckily, it doesn't happen often. So most people do see ahead of time, okay, there's going to be two things I'm going to have to pay. One is that I'm going to have to pay to buy these shares. And I wire an amount of money to the company. And you should have that. The second problem is that if the value has increased over time, this is maybe a little bit complex, like it creates, you can call it like phantom income. So it is not actual income, but it is when you buy something for like $10, but it's actually worth $50, well, the IRS will say, hey, you have phantom income this year. It is 50 minus 10, you have $40 of income, and you should pay tax on that. Like nobody can get income with anything without paying tax in that given tax year. So you pay tax on that given your tax bracket. But the harsh part is that this is an asset that is not liquid. You can't sell it as easily. So you buy something that potentially has a lot of value, but it doesn't actually give you that value back yet. So it is paper money, phantom income, and you have to pay tax on something you don't have money for. And that's the difficult situation.
So it seems to me that what you're also describing really fundamentally is an information asymmetry embedded in their employment, since most employees probably don't even know the value of their companies when they start. So what should they then do? And better yet, what exactly do you do to help them out?
First of all, someone should always ask. Like, ask the company you're going to work for and ask these data points. Unfortunately, too many people don't. And the company should tell you. That's I think, first of all. But we also give you that information. So what SecFi does, like, we gather all types of information on private companies, and we gather that on the platform. So when you sign up, for example, you indicate, hey, I work for company X or Y or Z. We have a lot of data on that company. So it's the valuation that the last investors paid shares for, and what price they paid shares for, and so on. You can all find that. So you can make a better estimate. And that gives you these insights like, hey, how much tax should I pay if I exercise? How much will I pay the company if I exercise? Like, first getting that information, getting that knowledge really, really helps.
Is there a tool whereby if you're starting off, there's a way to say if the valuation of your company is X and doubles over 2 or 3 years, you can expect Y taxes? I mean, is that part of the experience?
Yeah, that's part of the experience. And that's what a lot of people use it for. So, hey, what could this be? If it's worth X, like, what would that mean for me? And if it's Y, what would that mean? So you can really plan out and sort of do a scenario planning for yourself so you better understand the situation.
Well, it's a little bit like I guess kind of retirement planning, where they say, well,
yeah,
you know,
is.
Like well, how much, you know, money do you want to save for X amount?
Yeah, you can like, it was like drag, and you can see it like up or down, or what happens if I put a little bit more in and a little bit less in, what then happens? You can see these kind of tools in like the Wealthfronts and the Bettermans and these kind of, but then for stock options specifically.
But just circling back to your initial observation, at what point beyond the taxes and the like, does one know or should know that it might be a good idea to go ahead and exercise stock options? Is it better to exercise options earlier in the life of a company or later? And what are the strategic considerations that usually come into play?
Yeah, I agree. Like, in the end, that comes first, right? You first, should I do this? Is it even clever? Well, in this case, like, you become a little bit like an investor, right? That is in the end what you actually are. So you should also see this, like, am I going to make this investment? And if you're going to make an investment, like, if you understand the space, then I think you can potentially make it on your own. If you don't understand the space, like, talk to an expert, talk to a financial advisor, talk to a company like SecFi to figure out, hey, does this make sense for me? Two important things, I think. One is that, yeah, obviously the longer you wait with exercising, the more tax you're going to pay. So exercising sooner, from that perspective, can be seen as better. But the longer you wait, the more information you know, actually, if the company is going to make it. So unfortunately, yeah, you can like come in and exercise immediately, but then the majority, like, after the company raised 50K from someone, a seed round, let's go all in, and then a year later, didn't make it. that likelihood is obviously far higher. So yeah, unfortunately, there's no silver bullet here.
Do the calculations change if a company is acquired by another company as opposed to doing an IPO?
This becomes a little bit technical, but yes, the valuation can change, because this really has to do, and these are a couple of complicated terms perhaps, but this has to do in the end with liquidation preference. That's what it's called. And usually when venture investors or private equity funds pour in capital in a company, they get a sort of like preferred return. It's almost like first money in, or last money in, first money out. That is basically how it works. So the last investor that put money in, like a venture capital investor or something like that, is the first money out. And this ruling can really impact it if a company is acquired. So in some cases, you have these examples where a company might be acquired for 500 million, insane amount of money. But general rule of thumb, if that company has raised 500 million to get to this 500 million valuation, an employee might actually get zero, because all of that 500 million is going to go back to the investors that actually poured that capital in. So liquidation preference is super important to understand when you make this assessment.
Yeah, so you know, there's obviously a lot of action in this space. You know, there are different ways in which companies are even going public, which presumably then impact, you know, how one even thinks about options. You know, the example of obviously, you know, getting acquired versus doing an IPO, that then leads to questions about SPACs. The biggest craze, right? You know, questions about direct listings as opposed to doing an IPO. Yeah. You know, I mean, do these potentially secular changes in the way in which companies are either going public or fundraising, you know, how does that impact how both sort of SecFi thinks about the information people should know, and just even more generally, you know, for employees, you know, in this world of startups?
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it's a really positive thing for employees, because there are more ways the company can go public or get to an exit. And that means that the likelihood of you getting a payout from the stock option package actually increases. So the fact that there are such a massive amount of SPACs currently around looking for companies to acquire and go and take public, well, there's a lot of opportunity for individuals to that might see their stock options be worth something. It's more likely than it was before. Like, there are some, like, a SPAC, going public through a SPAC, if your company decides to do so, versus direct listing, is different, because a SPAC is sort of a public company already, for the people that don't know. And in the end, usually there's a sponsor, an outside investor that sponsored that SPAC, and they, by definition, get perhaps up to 20% of the company that they acquire. That means that, let's say your shares were worth $10 before, but if it gets acquired through a SPAC, by definition, it's only worth $8. Like, $2 of that went to that sponsor. So yeah, the valuation might be the same, but the share price that you get is actually lower. If otherwise your company wouldn't go public, that's better than nothing, right? That's for sure.
Does this mean sort of like, you know, the second and third generation sort of tools for employees would have to now, you know, take into account even more sort of scenarios? You know, it's like, okay, well, you know, just so that you know, here's how the world could look if XYZ happened to the company that you're working for. I mean, and if so, is you know, how do you create a platform to sort of deal with, you know, these kinds of new developments?
Yeah, well, we're constantly on top of these kind of things, obviously. So that's what SecFi, we only focus on this. Like, we're experts in this field, on the types of stock options, the tax changes, tax implications, what state you are in, and the types of exits and the types of dilution. This is called dilution, that concept. You could run into, and what the implications would be. So, yeah.
So you are now calling from Europe. I mean, and obviously there are lots of different sort of tax regimes, both at the state level in the United States and then and nationally. Yeah. Do you plan on you know, globally offering this kind of thing, or is it just, you know, let's focus on those innovation hubs?
We do focus on innovation hubs, but there are global innovation hubs. So in a way, yes. I think the reality is what you see, like in the end, we're in a global world. So the majority of large unicorns that pop up in the US, at some point they will look at international expansion. So you have these kind of hubs in London and in Europe and in other like countries in Europe and even in Asia. And those will have also employees that work for those similar companies and they deal with similar problems. So in the end, it is a global problem. And I think across the world, you see this concept of awarding employees with stock options. I think it's a trend and a growing trend. And I think rightfully so, because it's an amazing way. And I think it's also an amazing way to spread wealth in a way, because yeah, if otherwise 100% of the company might be owned by X number of investors, well, these days, luckily, it's 80% is owned by these investors and 20% is owned by these 5,000 employees. And it's so amazing because that wealth will start to like disseminate itself because they're going to start new companies and new businesses. And so it's, I think there's more ways to get that money back in the economy. So I think that's a really positive thing.
Just listening to this conversation, it seems like on the one hand, people should work to get all the necessary information they can on day one, but most people don't know whether or if a company they're working for will one day be a unicorn. So they don't know if it's really worth all the energy. You know, options are a lot like a lottery ticket. If it pans out, great. But of course, if it does pan out, now you haven't been worried and maybe you should have been worried, which creates a bit of a tension. So with that in mind, when is it rationally worth someone's time to really put forth all the energy to think through or to review one's stock options?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, rationally, considering, is it worth your time? I mean, obviously it is. Like, this can be so valuable if you make the right decision. Like, you gave up a lot. Most people give up a lot to actually work for a startup company. Like, you really earn less than at larger other companies that you could work for. Usually, there's long hours. It's a lot of hard work. And if it then pays off and you end up losing it all, worst of all, or you end up making 30% or 40% less because you made worse decisions, yeah, people spend a lot of time trying to like optimize getting a higher interest like a checking account, for example, or they, yeah, let's get a percentage point interest of my credit card bills, for example. Yeah, that's nothing compared to what this could be worth. So in terms of like, is it worth it? I think it is definitely worth it. And what you should do is that obviously at the Series A stage, you shouldn't spend like a day a week on it. But every time the company raises a round of funding, and it's not that often, but let's say it's once or twice a year, really do think about it. Hey, what does this mean? Do I still have the same view on this company? And if that is the same view, fine, right? You made the right call. You thought about it a little bit and then you postponed a decision. But as soon as you feel like, hey, wait a second, this is going in a pretty interesting direction, and you usually know because you're in the company, then take action, then spend some actual proper time on it. That's the advice I would give people.
Frederick, thanks so much for joining the show. This is really interesting stuff.
Very cool. Love to be on.
I have to admit it, I always knew that most employees at startups received stock options as part of their employment, but it hadn't really occurred to me that so many people would end up not exercising them, even when things panned out. And when you think about it, it can really impact just who wins in our new digital economy when companies grow and go public. But in any event, I think it's worth emphasizing Frederick's point that the very importance of options really puts the pressure on employees to not only know their own value, but to know that of their companies as well. And here it seems technology and some enterprising entrepreneurs may be able to make a difference. The question, of course, is the extent to which technology will be able to shed some light on information perhaps intentionally left obscure by founders, while also keeping pace with the multiplying paths companies are now taking to both grow and go public. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And we'd love to get your feedback. If you'd like to get in touch, just hit me up at Chris Brummer DR. That's at C-H-R-I-S-B-R-U-M-M-E-R-D-R. We'd love to hear from you.